Stephen Mailer, our guest. Next up, we're going to talk about the extraterrestrial presence and involvement with crystal skulls. Stephen, in your view, tell us what the ET connections might be to crystal skulls.
Certainly. But first, George, if you'd indulge me, I would like to ask you something that I've been meaning to do since the beginning.
Of course.
And this concerns the health of a mutual friend of ours and a great friend of the Coast audience who you just did a conference with last weekend in Southern California, Jordan Maxwell.
Yes.
How is he?
He's doing better, looks good, was at the conference, and had a great speech.
I'm so glad.
So all is going well with Jordan Maxwell.
So glad to hear that, because my wife and I were in Southern California 2 years ago, and we tried to connect with him, and he was in real poor health.
Yeah, he seems to have fought back.
Very glad to hear that. And Jordan, if you're listening, I love you, and be well. Thank you, George.
Good, good, good. Thanks. He's
okay, ET connection. Again, many people believe that the crystal skulls, particularly the ancient ones, are extraterrestrial, that they were not fabricated on this planet, including our good friend Richard Hoagland. I disagree. However, there is definitely that connection. I believe these skulls were carved on this planet by many people. You know, again, it's this. You know, it's amazing how I can just bring it back to where is my first love, which is ancient Egypt.
Sure.
You know, it's like you and I have talked about. We can't believe that we could build the Great Pyramid, so it had to be built by extraterrestrials. I mean, I've had debates with people who've seen this in visions, who've had past life regressions, and say they see the Great Pyramid being built with spaceships, et cetera, et cetera. And I totally disagree. But it's just a different disagreement. The crystals are radials. They are communication devices. So definitely the crystal skulls can communicate. The influence of ET activity around crystal skulls is inordinate. When I work with the Mayan crystal skull, people reported to me, I didn't see it, but people reported to me that they saw a UFO fly over Rosicrucian Park in San Jose, California. So, I mean, there's enormous amount of anecdotal evidence of people feeling that there is an extraterrestrial presence, connection, or that they were made by extraterrestrials or skulls. I think, again, they have the ability to communicate with physical ET beings and interdimensional consciousness. So it is my opinion that they were carved on this planet. But a lot of people, particularly around Max, think that the crystal that Max was made from is not from this planet. I think it is. But again, the amount of ET activity, and people who've never had these experiences. We had people we'd bring in for testing who never talked about ETs, never talked about UFOs, and all of a sudden in the crystal skulls they would start saying, well, there's an ET in there. I see even extraterrestrials. And so you can't dismiss this. And it happens to be in the Mitchell Hedges skull. There was an incredible photograph taken by Nick Nocerino. Let me say that again, because many people have used this photograph and not given him the credit for it. Nick Nocerino took a picture of the underside of the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, clearly showing what we have come to know in the field as a Pleiadian beam ship. So, yes, people see ETs in the crystal skulls. People see UFOs. So there definitely is a connection.
Do you remember the first Superman film with Christopher Reeve?
Yes.
When he flew to the North Pole,
yes,
he had to put in, they looked like ice crystals,
right,
for power purposes. Do you think crystals can also be used for some form of propulsion system?
Yes. For energy source, like you said, lighting, yes. I think crystals would, when they activated and would glow, could create a light source that, you didn't need electricity, you didn't need light bulbs. Were they propulsion systems? Of course, that Star Trek, the trilithium crystals. quite possibly,
yeah.
George. I don't believe there's any such thing as fiction. I've said this many years ago, and people are surprised at this. I think what we call fiction are just memories that people come up with that they think they're coming out of thin air, but I don't think there's any such thing. I think everything's been recorded, everything's been done, and we can access that. So were crystals used as propulsion systems? Quite possibly.
Someone somewhere had to first say a long time ago, these crystals can be used for X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
Now, with your work in the pyramids, were crystals ever found there?
Yes. Well, Another great point, George. Thank you. You talk to many Egyptologists who claim they've been in the field for many years. You say, did the ancient Egyptians use crystals? They say, no, of course not. No such evidence. Excuse me. What was found in King Tut's tomb was a beaded necklace that had carnelian, had lapis, and quartz crystal beads. They also found in Tut's tomb a crystal cup. So, of course they did. But, George, one of the key things to the Great Pyramid is the granite. The granite that comes from Aswan, 600 miles from Giza, is made of 55% rose quartz crystal. So, obviously, they knew it. They chose the stone for that reason, for its vibratory effect, for its ability to take a incoherent electrical charge and make it coherent, for working with vibrations through sound. So, obviously, the ancients knew about crystal and how to use it.
A friend of my brother-in-law purchased a meteorite. He has turned it into polished stones. He wanted to sell them to people. And I gave him my advice and said, you can't just sell them to people. So what he did is he said, then test it for me. So he shipped me five of these polished meteorite stones.
Ooh, I'd love
okay.
To
I gave them out, kept one myself, and we're supposed to keep them for 3 to 6 months and see what happens.
Right.
He claims incredible things. We'll see what happens.
Yes.
I've checked in.
Give you some tests to use with them. A lot of people will take crystal, put it in a glass of water, see if the water it gives you any other special effects.
You're saying drink the water?
Yes, you can drink the water.
Don't swallow the crystal.
Take the crystal out. But yes.
Yeah.
Ancient people did that. Rosicrucians did that. Rosicrucians would do things by taking, in fact, if you take different colored glass, like blue, like green, put it in the sunlight, the vibrational effect of the color will affect the water. Rosicrucians have been doing tests like that for hundreds of years. You can do that with crystal. In fact, one of the greatest scientists who ever lived had the title Paracelsus, and many people will know that name. It's probably buzzing some people right now. His real name was Alfredus Bombastus von Hohenheim. Look the name Paracelsus. He actually ground up quartz crystal, would put it in different elixirs for people to take internally for diseases, and it worked.
And you do know that with a crystal glass, for example, if you just, clip your finger against it, it makes an incredible sound.
Right.
A vibration.
Right.
I think that has something to do with its power.
Absolutely. If people got to see the sci-fi special last weekend, which I was in all of 30 seconds, it shows me using a tuning fork to put on a max. That tuning fork given to me by Jonathan Goldman is tuned to the frequency of quartz crystal. When I would hit the tuning fork and put it on max, he would sing. He would so that's a vibrational resonance harmony. We always talked about, and many people got these visions, which they called singing crystals. Now we're going to talk about the legend of the 13 skulls. But what we would see was when crystals are placed together and you activate them by sound, when you hit the right frequency and vibrational frequency, they resonate, they sing. They actually hum and make noise.
Well, there is something about it then.
Oh, absolutely. And it's vibration. It comes down to vibration.
There is a story out there about Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Uh-huh.
I want your take on that story. Oh. Give us the myth.
Okay. This is going to go into a field where I know we're going to get I'm going to get some negative criticism. I have been prepared for this, but it has to be done.
These are your views, so let's just...
Exactly. Well, actually, it's really the views of Nick Nocerino. And nobody researched the Mitchell Hedges skull more than he did. He took a team to Anna Mitchell Hedges' house in 1985, a team of his students, and researched that skull for 2 to 3 weeks. He interviewed her daily, and he recorded these interviews. I saw the Mitchell Hedges skull in 1988. I also interviewed and questioned Anna Mitchell Hedges. First of all, let's give a big caveat. The Mitchell Hedges skull is incredible. It is a priceless work of art, polished in near optical quartz grade, only with one slight occlusion. It's almost flawless, looks like glass. Tremendous energy involved with that skull. I first worked with it. I saw ancient scenes in it. Immediately, I thought this must be an ancient skull. But the skull itself bothered me because it was too anatomical. It was too much like, you see, how we differentiate the ancient skulls from a modern skull is people, particularly contemporary skulls, skulls carved within the last 50 years, and there's been an amazing amount of skulls carved within the last 20 to 30 years coming out of Brazil, coming out of China, coming out of many different places, great carvers. When someone is carving, again, intent of the carver, if you're carving a skull to sell, you're going to look for something that's aesthetically pleasing, a beautiful piece of crystal. You're going to carve it, a fine quality piece of crystal. You're going to carve it really nicely. You want to sell it. The real genuine ancient crystal skulls are carved out of quartz. Joanne Parks refers to Max as junk crystal. It's not something that's aesthetically pleasing. They were chosen by the ancient shamans and masters because of the vibrational frequency of this crystal, not for aesthetic reasons. Now, Mitchell Hedges' skull is an enigma. It is the most well-known, most written about, even mentioned in the Indiana Jones movie, but it is the most controversial. Originally, I thought it was ancient. Originally, Nick thought it was ancient. But we changed our minds. And Nick, no sooner before he passed, he confided in me. He wanted me, when he was gone, to present the story of his real opinions, what he thought about that skull, and Anna Mitchell Hedges. Now, we both agreed when we discussed this first in 1999 and again in 2001 that we would not bring out this information during her lifetime. Why? Well, it would be easy for us to be attacked as beating up on an old woman, as discrediting someone who was nice, sweet, gentle old lady, and that was not nice. Well, it's going to be the same thing now.
You can't win.
You're attacking somebody who's passed and can't defend herself.
Right.
But we did interview her, George. We did interview. So let me give you the detail.
All right.
As people know, the accepted story is that Anna Mitchell Hedges found that skull at a site called Lubantum. We must tell people that that is not an ancient site name of Mayan city. It was a name given by Dr. Thomas Gann, and F.A. Mike Mitchell Hedges means the place of falling stones in the Mayan language, but it was not the name of the site. They gave it that name. And let's clear up something now. Everybody thinks that Mike Mitchell Hedges led this expedition and was as the head of it. He was not. Dr. Gann was head of it. Mike Mitchell Hedges was along for the ride as an adventurer. He was not an archaeologist, and he was not the model for Indiana Jones, as many people think. But let's get to her story. She said she found the skull there. She found it in a pyramid underneath, found it under some rocks, and brought it out, and that's the story. However, many people say that she was consistent with her story. That's why they believe her. Well, they have not researched the subject. She changed the date three different times in three different decades. In the 60s, she said she found the skull in 1926. In the 70s, she said she found it in 1927, because then realizing some people could do research, she wasn't there in 1926. But then in the 80s, she had totally changed the story. This was the story that I heard her give, that she had found it on her 17th birthday, exactly on her 17th birthday. Well, quick little research showed that she was born January 1st, 1907. Her 17th birthday would have been January 1st, 1924. They were not at the site at that time. Now, the other people part of the expedition, not only Mitchell Hedges wrote his autobiography, Dr. Thomas Gann wrote a book about it. Lady Richmond Brown, who financed the expedition, perhaps was a lover of Mike Mitchell Hedges, she wrote a book about it. And a man named Captain T.A. Joyce, who led them there, also wrote a book about the work at Lubantun. None of them ever mentioned the find of a crystal skull there. Now, there have been many different reasons that we go into detail in the book of why people say that they didn't mention it, but none of them make any sense. So no one ever mentioned Anna Mitchell Hedges being on site or ever finding a crystal skull there. No one. And she claims they witnessed the find, but they never spoke about it. No one ever corroborated her story. So they were not there until the fall of 1924. They arrived at the city of Belize, which was then the capital of what was known as British Honduras. Today it is the name of the whole country. But then it was just the capital city. In Mitchell Hedges' own autobiography, in Dr. Gann's book about it, called Mystery of the Cities of the Maya, they didn't get there till late 1924, didn't begin their excavations until 1925. So her story of finding it on her 17th birthday, January 1st, 1924, is a complete fabrication. the rest of the story is also a complete fabrication because she changed the story so many times. She said that they, you know, first had to move some stones. It was found in a pyramid. Later, she changed the story saying she saw something shining down in a pit. Her father lowered her down on some ropes, and she didn't have to move any great stones. It was there, partially exposed in the dirt. She found the jaw, detachable jaw, 3 weeks later. So she changed the story so many times that Chris Nocerino has said to me that whenever anybody would talk to Nick Nocerino about Anna Mitchell Hedges' story, he would always say, "Don't tell a lie that you can't repeat." Meaning she changed the story so many times, she was never consistent. So, George, my opinion, I put it in the book, she was never at Lubentun. That skull was never found there. It is not a Mayan skull. It was not made by the Mayans. So either then it is pre-Mayan, older, or it is an old skull, modern. Nick Nocerino believed that the Mitchell Hedges skull was carved in around 1850, 1860, in a town called Oberstein, Germany, which was the leading carvers of quartz crystal in the world in the middle 19th century.
Stephen,
I can't prove this, George. I want to make this clear to people.
Right.
We cannot prove this, but I want to say to people that there is no evidence whatsoever that Anna Mitchell Hedges ever found that skull, or that Mike Mitchell Hedges ever had that skull in his possession before 1944.
Why does it seem that most of the stories of the quote-unquote authentic skulls originate from either the Mayan civilization or the Aztecs?
Yes, because they had them, without a doubt. Again, the Mayan priest Francisco Reyes, who Richard Shasky talked to you about. Richard Shasky was actually the one who made the connection with Francisco Reyes for Nick Nocerino, and Richard was involved in helping to bring two skulls into the country, the Mayan crystal skull and the amethyst crystal skull, both that I work with. Francisco Reyes said to me quite clearly, he said it in Spanish, it was interpreted for me, the Mayans never carved any of the large crystal skulls, neither did the Aztecs, but they venerated them. They believed that they were gifts from their gods, which, George, could mean extraterrestrials or a previous ancient civilization. So they venerated these skulls. They worshipped the skulls. They used the skulls in healing, in storing information, in accessing the information. So the Mayans were very actively involved with the skulls. I believe the Aztecs only carved the small ones that are in museums in Mexico. They never carved any large crystal skulls.
Is there a Mayan calendar crystal skull tie-in?
The upper cranium of a human skull was actually a Mayan glyph for zero, which to them did not mean nothing. It meant infinity. So they used them in their writing, skulls, and skull motifs are all over Mayan. Again, people look at our book. David Childress's first section in the book is brilliant because David is an incredible researcher. Why I have such respect for David is he writes from firsthand experience. He really is Indiana Jones. He's traveled all over the world. He has been to Lubantun. He saw the Mitchell Hedges skull, met Anna Mitchell Hedges, and he's done tremendous research on the Mesoamerican civilizations. When you had him on a couple of weeks ago, he spoke about his previous book, Mystery of the Olmecs. I recommend that highly. Both David and I are very fascinated by the Olmec civilization, which was before the Maya. We don't know how old they are. They actually were known as the Olmen. Olmec is a more modern name. They are very, very ancient. I believe the Olmecs may have carved some of the large crystal skulls, but thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. I don't believe the Mayans carved any of the large skulls, but they were passed down to them. These skulls are passed down in hand lines. How a lot of these skulls have been found is in Mayan tombs. In fact, people have asked me, well, why would they bury the skulls with somebody if they were so important to them? Well, if a particular shaman or healer was highly venerated, i.e., a Jesus figure to the Mayans, sometimes when they passed, they put the crystal skulls in the tombs with them. And so that's why they've been found in tombs. But the Mayans did not carve them. But many, many of the skulls, like Max, were never found, or at least haven't been in tombs for a long time. They've been passed down, and one shaman will pass it to another, pass it down to be used. It's a long tradition of the use of crystal skulls with the Maya and with the Aztecs and with the Olmec.
I wonder if December 21st, 2012, all the crystal skulls will just light up.
Well, something, again, we've talked about that. A lot of people believe that. I don't think December 21st, 2012 is its cataclysm is end of the world, like many people think. I would refer to people to John Major Jenkins on that.
Sure.
He's great on that.
Yes.
I believe that the end of the Mayan calendar is exactly what my teacher Hakim is saying. We're coming to the end of a cycle, a shift. We're going to go into what the Mayans call no time, which means it's going to be a very different consciousness. But
you
it's
may
not
be
going
right,
to be the
Steve.
End of the world, George.
You may be right. We'll be back with more and Fast Blast Questions with Stephen Mailer. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with our guest, Stephen Mailer, as we talk about crystal skulls. But when we come back, let's open up the fast blasts for you. We'll take some of your questions, and I'll just pass them on to him. Stephen, before we take some of these fast blast questions, the next hour, of course, we'll take phone calls for you. Basically, final conclusions that Nick Nocerino and you have about the skulls.
That they were computers, that they are here to interact with human consciousness, that they're here to uplift humanity. They are portals. They are bridges to extraterrestrial and interdimensional consciousness. An amazing thing, George, they're to activate the silicon in ourself. We think, many people have thought that we're a carbon-based organism. A crystal, of course, is a silicon-based organism, so their interfaces, bridges between those two understandings. But it's amazing. Most people don't realize that only in the late 70s, modern science discovered that we have trace elements of silicon in our body, that our bone structure is not just calcium and magnesium, but what gives it its rigidity, its ability to keep us standing upright, is silicon. So the crystal skulls activate the silicon consciousness in ourselves, are able to make us understand that we're not the only conscious being there is in the universe.
Some fast blast questions here for you, Stephen.
Yes,
Kevin,
sir,
from Ontario wants to know if you've heard rumors that skulls are hidden on the moon.
Well,
I haven't heard that one.
Well, Richard Hogan has put that one out. No. And I'm sure Richard would say that they're on Mars, too. I've never heard that. And again, to be honest, there are stories about Tibetan crystal skulls, story about Peruvian crystal skulls, story about Native American crystal skulls. The only known ones we know for sure have come out of tombs from Mexico or Central America. Now, that does not mean they're not, the other ones are not there. But what we can say definitely, the only ones we know about have come out of Mexico and Central America.
Let's talk a little bit more, they write, about the storage data capacity of crystal skulls.
Excellent. Now they wanted to talk about Marcel Vogel.
Uh-huh.
He called it the lattice defect theory. And I researched the idea afterward. It's not just New Age hooey-bluey. It is actually physical science. Okay, let's talk about crystal. Quartz crystal is silicon dioxide. That's one silicon atom bonded to two oxygen atoms that are formed in a hexagonal six-sided shape. That's why most crystals, quartz crystals, have a six side. In the chemical structure, in the bond of silicon dioxide, sometimes in quartz, this silicon atom is actually missing, not there. It's empty space. A small piece of quartz crystal, like you or I have, could actually have thousands of what are called, there's two defects mainly in crystal, called line defects and point defects. For our purposes, we talk about point defects. What is a point defect is when a silicon atom is missing in the bond. Marcel Vogel told us, he told me in 1980, that empty space can be occupied by energy. That energy can be put in there as information pulsed by breath and sound from one human being. So one can put information into a crystal by pulsing it through sound and breath to fill that empty space. A small piece of crystal could have thousands of point defects. A crystal skull can have terabytes, can have bytes we haven't even discovered it, infinitesimal ability to store information. And after Marcel Vogel gave us this theory, I researched it. People can Google lattice defect theory, go to books on crystallography, and look in the bibliography that David and I have. I have the books in there. This is actual scientific fact that these point defects exist. The silicon atom can be missing, and it can be occupied by energy, pulsed thought from the human mind.
Anne from Hermosa Beach, California. How can you learn these deep breathing and toning exercises that you mentioned earlier to access the knowledge of a crystal?
Again, great question. People can learn techniques from masters who teach deep breathing, yoga trainers, people who do deep breathing exercises. Anybody can do it themselves. You can develop your own technique. It's just doing very slow, deep breathing, relax one's mind, try to remove thoughts from the mind, be in a calm state, deep breathing, and you find yourself. You see, to really work with a crystal skull, one must attune first. That's why I tend to be critical in the book of people who channel just at the drop of a hat without attuning themselves. Nick Nocerino taught specific techniques to his students of deep breathing, using sound to access the skull. So anybody who teaches yoga or has access to anybody who does deep breathing exercises can learn how to do that.
Might the Ark have been used in the crystals been used in the Ark of the Covenant?
Yes. In fact, what I think the Ark of the Covenant was extraterrestrial stone, like meteorites or moldavites, which people know what that stone is, that had tremendous power and energy. They were extraterrestrial, not from this planet, stone.
Give us a breakdown about the crystal skulls in terms of the amethyst crystal skull.
My favorite. Second one I saw, also brought in by Francisco Reyes. I first saw it in 1982. Incredible skull. Amethyst happens to be my particular favorite stone. I have an amethyst skull of myself. Different than quartz, because you can't scry or crystal gaze with amethyst. It's opaque. Nick Nocerino taught everybody, his students and everybody who follow after, the ancient technique of scrying, which is a word that's archaic. Crystal gazing is the modern term where you actually can look into crystal, see scenes. Now, how Nick taught us is if you have a clear crystal skull, like the Mitchell Hedges skull, you have to interact with mine and fog it. Make it foggy, cloudy, so you can see scenes in it. When you have a cloudy crystal skull, like the Mayan crystal skull, Nick said you have to clear it. Actually make clear space in it, and you can see scenes. And these skulls do change. Max, of course, is the skull I've been with the most since 1989, particularly since 1995. Max has changed significantly over the 19 years that I've known him, and that he was basically all cloudy when we first saw him. Now he's got a whole side of his face that's cleared up because of interacting with people. So mind can work with the skulls to see the scenes in it that you want to see, but you have to tune to the crystal. You have to do that attunement to work with the skull to see the scenes in them.
And they're easy to shatter?
Yes. You could drop crystal on the floor. It's going to crack, sure. And this is why we say the ancient ones were not done with power tools, like Jane Walsh says. Certainly the modern ones were. But you can, I could do that. I can, again, taught by Nick Nocerino, I can authenticate a skull very quickly. It takes me, I would like to test for a long time to be sure. But I can look, I have real good affinity with artifacts. That's part of my work as an archaeologist, Egyptologist. I can tell, looking at a crystal skull, whether it was carved by hand or by machine.
Well, fascinating. What is a crystal skull? How was it formed? Not the skull itself, but I mean the crystal actually, over time by nature, how was it made?
Tremendous heat and pressure. That's why mostly in between volcanoes. That's why most of the crystal veins are found in caves.
Could you also call it glass?
Well, glass is silicon, but it's not silicon dioxide.
It's a stretch.
Glass is not the same as quartz. Obsidian is more like volcanic glass. That's a stone. Obsidian is formed in volcanoes. It's more like glass than like crystal. But quartz crystal is formed over a tremendous amount of time, tremendous heat and pressure. They can make synthetic crystal now. Of course they do. But it takes tremendous, laboratory conditions, heat and pressure to form, and synthetic crystal is nothing like natural crystal.
Richard from Sioux City, Iowa. Could the crystal skulls be some sort of teleportation system?
Absolutely. That's why we call them interdimensional portals. Believe me, George, I've been with people and myself that when they've gone into crystal skulls, have gone into different dimensions, different universes. That's the way you see the ETs, you see the ships, you see parallel lives, you see things, sometimes you have to bring somebody back or they're going to stay out there. But yes, the ancient skulls particularly are interdimensional portals. You can go anywhere, anytime, any place. The future, like Richard Chasky told you, and the past.
By the way, we're getting calls from Billings, Montana, that there was some kind of explosion out that way. Somebody said it sounded like a turboprop airplane flying over, got louder, and then lit up. He said, I saw a fireball within 5 miles of my house. So anybody out there in Billings, Montana, just fast blast me, if you will. We'll get some information on what.
By the way, George, to add some more information to what you were talking about earlier, there was a tremendous tornado in northern Colorado today, just a couple hours from where I live. Tremendous tornado, one of the biggest that's ever been recorded in Colorado. They are believing it is a Cat 4, which could be almost up to 200 miles an hour.
I know. That is something. What's up?
So, you know, this is the point, George, that we can go back to the 2012. I say it's happening now. You've talked about it. You've talked about it often. The earth changes are happening now. We're going to see more severe hurricanes, more severe tornadoes, more severe earthquakes. I agree with Jim Berkland. He's looking at the seismic window right now.
He is.
Always watch the papers for missing cats and dogs.
I'm going to St. Louis for just a little bit for a wedding and a birthday, mine, and not my wedding, but my birthday. And you know what? The last time I was there, Stephen, I got hit by an earthquake.
Ooh.
I bet it's going to happen again.
Well, Southern California is due. I know that's where you are, but I think you'll be protected, George.
Of all, everything you've studied so far with regards to the crystal skulls, is there something still that you don't have the answers for that baffles you?
Well, yes. Of course, exactly how they were carved. Again, we're talking about people in the highest state of consciousness. We can theorize by how, but you know, we can't duplicate that today. Like, we can't duplicate the Great Pyramid today. I always say that's why I don't call myself a crystal skull expert. I've researched them for 28 years, but I always say crystal skull research is ongoing. You know, it's again. Nick used to say, the more I research him, the less I know. That would just show his great humility. Nobody knew more than he did. But there's still many mysteries about them. Sure, there's information. Again, infinitesimal amount of storage. The information that can come out of a Max or Shana Ra, we can't catalog in our lifetimes.
Have you found any skulls, or have any skulls been found that do not look human?
Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh.
There's one in particular that is called E.T. It was owned by a woman named Yoki van Dieten. I never really got to test that skull myself. It's a smoky quartz skull. It's gorgeous. It has the E.T. elongated head, and that is the skull that's in the Indiana Jones movie. Nick Nocerino worked with that skull, and he said that had tremendous energy. That quite possibly could be an ancient skull. It's one of those I talk about. Again, I've not tested it, not worked with it enough to really give that classification, but I go with Nick. Nick thought that that quite possibly could be an ancient skull, and it looks very E.T.
Is the Book of Revelation, is that have anything to do with crystal skulls?
Not that I know of.
Okay, 2012 does.
Yes.
And again, Book of Revelation's tied to end times, which we've just talked about.
Well, again, all I see, though, that as being is the end of the cycle, just like the Mayan calendar, just like the Revelations. Yes, we're coming to the end of a cycle, and the crystals, again, Nick Nocerino saw in the Mayan crystal skull three great cataclysmic events that had happened on our planet, which he said were millions of years ago. In the Amethyst crystal skull, he saw two. I saw a great cataclysmic changes in all the skulls I work with from the past and perhaps telling us what's going to happen in the future.
Did Edgar Cayce ever talk about the crystal skulls?
Not that I know of, George.
No.
That might be something somebody else could come up with. Not that I know of.
How about Zachariah Sitchin and some of his work?
No, not crystal skulls as far as I know.
Nice.
But he definitely said that the Anunnaki were metallurgists, came on the earth to mine, so I'm sure they discovered crystals while they were here.
Now, those anthropologists who debunked the skulls as being modern fakes.
Yes.
If you had them in a room, what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I would take a Max and Shana Ra and say, prove to me that they're modern, which they can't. I would say, try to have, I mean, the problem is you have to have an open mind, and many of these people have the closest of minds, so that it would be difficult. But I would tell them that, look, I'm a credentialed archaeologist, prehistorian. I was trained in archaeology by one of the greatest prehistorians who ever lived, Professor Francois Bord. He used to be the director of antiquities of southwestern France. I did archaeology under him in 1974. I'm sure he's passed now, too. He taught me geology as well as archaeology. I know the science. I know what they're talking about. I know how they date things. And I know what they're talking about, the use of the wheel, that pre-Columbian cultures didn't have the wheel. So if they can show that the wheel was used in these skulls, they have to to be modern, but that's, I mean, they're stuck in their paradigms. The wheel might be much older than they say it is. The use of diamond tools we see in ancient Egypt, we see among these people. So I would try to have them have an open mind, objective, to look at the skulls, to show how we work with them, to feel the energy. And if they can't feel the energy, there's nothing you can do with them. But I can tell you, George, that everyone that I've ever seen been around Max has always felt some. And people who come in, I've seen men who were dragged, kicking and screaming into a Max lecture by their wives who were totally into it, came in totally negative, expecting it to be New Age woo-woo crap, and actually felt the energy of Max and had to admit it. So I would just like to take a Jane Walsh and some of these anthropologists and really sit down with these girls and tell me they don't feel the energy. And if they don't, they don't have any feeling. They're dead, and they don't understand anything about crystal, and they don't understand anything how ancients used crystal.
David from St. Louis writes to simply say, I like this guy. There you go.
Thank you, David.
There you go. Another David, this one from Nebraska. He says, can you buy crystal skulls anywhere?
Oh, yes.
And how do you know you're getting the real thing?
Oh.
Not plastic, not acrylic.
Oh, no. Yes. Oh, quartz crystal skulls. I have two very, very good friends named Joe and Mary Lee Swanson. They have a business called Crystals with a K. They sell crystal skulls. They have beautiful skulls. There are many, many people. All you have to do is Google it. You'll find many people.
All sizes?
All sizes. All costs. All price ranges. Yes. From a little one that's like a pea, I have one that on my keychain, which is like the size of a marble, to the Smithsonian skull is the biggest one. It's 40 pounds. Huge. Max is the biggest of the ancient ones at 18 pounds. But yes, all sizes, all types of stone. It's become a tremendous industry in the last 20 to 30 years. You can find crystal skulls out of every possible stone imaginable.
Gianni, Montreal, what's the most memorable thing you've seen or heard about with skulls? That was a devious laugh.
So many. I remember once being on a panel with Nick Dorsorino, and somebody asked him that question, and he said, all experiences are memorable. I'll tell you what, the most memorable experience for me is Max himself. When I first met Max, among other things, Max, crystal skulls are matchmakers. Max brought my wife and I together. We met at a function for Max in Boulder, Colorado, 1997. Max put us together, told us we had work to do together, and we, you know, he certainly was right. And he's always, every time I see him again, are you doing it? Are you working? What are you guys doing? You have to do something. I put you together for a reason. So, yes, that's the most memorable experience for me, is that Max introduced me to my wife.
If you were able to carve a huge diamond into a crystal skull, into a skull, what kind of powers do you think it would have?
I don't think diamond has the power that people think it does. It's beautiful, but actually there is one, George. There is a diamond-encrusted skull which is for sale for $10 million.
Ten? How many carats is that?
Oh, my God. It's over 40. It might be 100 carats. I don't remember. I'm not specific. But I did see an article about it. A diamond-encrusted skull that is $10 million at least. But I don't think, in my particular, I've never vibrated to diamond as I do to quartz.
Do they bring you luck if you just keep it?
Yes.
They do?
Yes.
And what about any healing or spiritual benefit if you just keep it on?
Yes. I keep crystals on me all the time. Nick Nocerino kept crystals on him all the time. They balance your natural vibratory state. They help your immune system. Absolutely. People wear crystals around their neck. You can just have them in your pocket. They don't even have to be on the skin. Yes, just having crystals in your house, absolutely. They improve your life.
They would probably be pretty good gifts if people would understand them and not think that you're trying to do some kind of strange magic against them.
Exactly. Exactly. Again, it's our Judeo-Christian Islamic mindset that sees a skull as being death or evil. Ancient people didn't think that way.
Star from New York says, I bought a small skull in an antique shop. They told me it was crystal. How do I know for sure? Good question. How do you know you have crystal?
Right. It's just whether you... take it to a gemologist. Take it to a crystallographer. Take it to somebody who knows. I mean, it's that simple to do. Any jeweler will know.
A qualified gemologist, the GIA would do, right?
Certainly. There are very few skulls that are really carved out of glass or plastic or resin or things like that. So I would say overall majority of the skulls you see out there are actually quartz, are actually crystal skulls.
All right, let's take some phone calls when we come right back, okay?